Welcome to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. I'm Phil McKenzie.
I'm Michael Brooks.
On Point is where we highlight someone getting it right. And this week, I'm really proud to sit down with a woman who has done so many amazing things. She is not only an artist, she is an advocate. She is now also a politician. And we are joined by Ms. Ingrid LaFleur, who is currently running for mayor of Detroit. How are you?
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Phil. I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
You sound very happy to be here. Like, this is like a ray of sunshine. Usually our guests are not this, not so cheerful and enthusiastic. They are enthusiastic, but not as cheerful. So we're really off to a good start. And we have a lot to cover because you have done and continue to do many amazing things. And I guess let's start on the political side of the fence. You have thrown your hat in the ring to run for the mayor of Detroit. So walk us through a little bit of that process. Like, what got you interested in running, and what are some of the major points of your platform?
First of all, I'm a born and raised Detroiter, so I am completely in love with this city and have always been a huge advocate and always been very loyal. If you've met any Detroiter, I'm sure you know how loyal we can be to our city. After substitute teaching in schools, I realized it takes more than just loyalty. And that's when I really started to understand the issues and the problems that Detroit is facing. So, of course, Detroit is a beautiful city, and it has so many great things going for it. We are going through a major transformation, and you do see the revitalization in very particular areas of the city, and that is exciting. But we have a 40% poverty rate. 60% of our youth are in poverty. And so that talking about revitalization just doesn't seem right with such a large percentage, or any percentage at all, of our youth in poverty like that. And having experienced it firsthand really changed my life. It made me really want to go deeper into the issues more than I think than just read the newspaper. And so that's when I started investigating on my own, not only what the issues were, but also the people who have been fighting on the ground to create solutions. But city government hasn't been listening lately, and or probably ever. And it's for that reason, we're still in this position. And the inequities are inexcusable. And that's why I'm running for mayor. I think my background, I'm an artist and a curator. So it makes me a very unique kind of political candidate. But we are in an unlikely, unique position as a city. We are trending everywhere because of our challenges. It's so fascinating to people. But this is a great opportunity to really implement solutions that we've probably never really seen in a city before and truly create that equitable governance that really helps every single citizen of our city.
Now, you mentioned obviously your background as an artist. We're gonna dive more into that, but you know, an artist is not typically who we think of as running or really participating in politics as a candidate. Obviously, we've seen a lot of move toward "quote unquote" outsiders in a very evil way with our current administration. But perhaps there, do you think that benefits you not being a part of a traditional political system, that you can play the role of an outsider?
Yes, I actually want more creatives to run for political office. It takes that kind of ability to think outside the box and to really not always stay in that political lane, right? So when you're part of any industry, you usually think that certain things are done in a very particular way. And so you only think within that kind of box. And not being a politician, I get to pull from all kinds of experiences and resources that maybe, you know, that usually doesn't show up in politics. Even the way that I campaign is different. And I think that it's necessary to really shift how we thinking about politicians, who can be a politician, and how politics, the system of politics itself, needs to be shifted. Clearly, it hasn't been serving the people for decades, if not longer, for, you know, bodies of color, it's been centuries. So, you know, we need to change the system and really make that shift so that we can see progress in real concrete ways that really truly affect lives in a positive way.
Do you find that coming from that background that you're able to kind of pull together the usual sorts of coalitions that you need in order to have a successful campaign? I know, you know, people think of politicians as people who are either already serving electeds in some sort of way, like they're in that world, or they're attorneys or whatever the case might be. I think we all kind of, or they're business people, right? Those are some of the usual places where we tend to pull politicians from. Have you run into any situations where people don't view your candidacy with the same seriousness they would if you came from one of those particular backgrounds? Do you find yourself having to fight that battle of saying, like, you know, the arts, the creatives is as valid a space as any other to exact political change?
Well, you know, here in Detroit, it doesn't really come up in conversation. It's more, the concern is, what are you going to do? What is your focus? What is your platform focusing on? I think people just want to see action. They're not truly concerned if you have the background or not. Those within the political realm are a little more, what would be the word? I guess just a little more critical.
Closed-minded?
This is Michael. I just arrived from my run myself. Thank you for joining us.
Hi.
Or thank me for getting here.
Awesome.
I'm sorry about that.
No, it's okay. Well, I understand, you know, because the game, the political game is so, it's just such a web that people within that system are concerned that I may not be able to navigate it correctly or be able to get things done because I don't want to play the game the way it's usually done. One of the things on my platform, I'm all about transparency. So that right there goes against majority of every politician that at least I know of and what they do. They're not about transparency in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, that kind of it butts up against their own goals and ideas of what power within these positions looks like. And for me, it's less about the power. It's more about my ability to accomplish the goals that we set forth together as a city and, you know, ensuring that I am serving the city in the best possible way.
You know, one of the things I noticed when I was last in Detroit and have spent some time there, and, you know, I came to your gallery and we got to spend some time together, is the vastness of the city. I don't think people who haven't been to Detroit really can imagine how geographically big the city is. You know, people tend to think a city like New York is pretty big, and I try to say, well, it's dense, right, but not actually geographically as large as Detroit. And I remember thinking, like, to your point about how there is revitalization going on in some areas, but yet a lot of the city is either being maybe ignored, might be too strong a word, left behind. There is that dichotomy that exists there. How do you think is there a way to effectively bridge that kind of gap where the investment, the attention is being spent in downtown and Eastern Market can be shifted to maybe some of those forgotten areas? Like, is that possible, and how do you kind of envision some of that happening?
Yes, you know, that is definitely, neighborhood investment is like number one on everyone's list. It's either education and neighborhood and investment. One of the things there's so many different elements at play here, and that's like such a long conversation, but I will try my best to shorten it. When it comes to the neighborhoods, we are experiencing a level of displacement that I don't know if other cities have experienced on such an aggressive level. So it's no mistake that our poverty level is so high and it's not being addressed. So I don't know if you know that, like, water shutoffs, for instance, water shutoffs are happening at an alarming rate. There are people living in Detroit without water for years. And if you don't, and it's become a public health risk. I want to add as well. And so Henry Ford Hospital has come out with a report about how communicable diseases have spiked as a result of these water shutoffs that the emergency manager actually started. Mm-hmm. So with the water shutoff, so the water bill is attached to your property, your property tax. So if you don't pay your water bill, you might lose your property. So it's just another way to displace people. We are seeing this displacement so that they can get ready for something else. They being the powers that be, maybe other developers. We're not exactly sure what the end game is to in terms of like that process, but there is definitely an attack on lower income people here in Detroit. And it's really sad. One of the things that that is necessary is to keep people in their homes, number one. Number two is to ensure that people who are working for the city, fire, police, city government, are required to live in the city. Number two, having strong small businesses throughout the city, not just in this one location. And we have the income in so many different parts of the city to sustain small businesses. But it's really about the support that they need to have in order to open and to remain open. And really attracting investors to the city. I'm really big on not only supporting the entrepreneurs here in Detroit, but also attracting investors from the African diaspora. If for those who don't know, Detroit is 85% Black. We're the only majority Black major city of this kind in the entire nation. And that means a lot to me, and I'm hoping for a lot of people who are of color, because we are a safe place, and that's very important nowadays when you're seeing, you know, police brutality across the nation. Mm-hmm. We need to keep this place a safe place, and having a high African diasporic population really does affect the policies and how we craft and mold all of the different institutions here, or at least it should, yeah. In my vision. So all of these things, I think, you know, together can help definitely, you know, to create these neighborhoods that I'm used to, or I was used to when I was growing up. I was born in 77. So that was around the height of Detroit. We had the largest Black middle class then. That's when the neighborhoods were the strongest and thriving. And so I really, because I know what Detroit can be like, I want to go back to that and trying to think of what are the ways that we can ensure that not only do we bring people back into the neighborhoods, but there are services and there's businesses available close by that, you know, make it more attractive and pleasurable to live there.
I'm gonna do a quick plug, and I know Michael wants to jump in with some things.
Yeah.
We had a gentleman on the show a couple of weeks ago, I guess.
Yeah.
Named Peter Moskowitz, who wrote a book called How to Kill a City, and he spent a lot of time in Detroit. The book is broken down into a focus on four cities: San Francisco, New Orleans, Detroit, and New York. And as you're talking about these issues around water and displacing people out of their homes and building strong neighborhoods that can support businesses and really support community, he talks a lot about that. So if you can listen to the episode that has him on it for the shorthand, or you could check out his book. But I think you guys would be kindred spirits,
definitely,
to say the least. And now I know Michael wants to jump in. So
yeah, no, I just want to, one of the things that kind of struck me in just listening to you now after I was able to get here and also researching for this interview is this way in which you're kind of like reconnecting, and these things were never disconnected in actuality, but there was this movement that, you know, took place several years ago, and actually, as far as I understood, really hit Michigan pretty hard in some ways, of this sort of like creative cities movement, this kind of, this guy Richard Florida talking about creative culture and economic development. And it was this way in which the kind of creative culture got separated from issues of inequality, race, and really kind of broad-based strategies for cities that would actually work for everybody, and then kind of became an extension of sort of gentrification, making everything kind of boutique and sort of geared in very, very narrow economic and racial ways. And I like that, you know, in this run, you're sort of bringing, and in your work in general, you're bringing those threads back together and getting away from that kind of unhealthy connection with so-called sort of creative cities, creative culture, and really just the kind of same kind of strategies that we've been seeing that haven't worked for a lot of people.
Yes, I think because Detroit is a majority Black city and I'm a Black woman, my concerns go a little deeper. And I understand the histories of Black people in the United States and how we're still being haunted by these white supremacist systems, even though we're in a majority Black city.
Right.
That's always been my confusion. I am a huge proponent of art and culture being a driver in revitalizing our city, but it must come from the people. And so when you're hearing about creative placemaking, it's like they want the shiny, pretty kind of glossy, you know, art and culture, and not the like rooted, grounded art and culture that actually speaks to the people, or at least my people here in Detroit. And so that's when you get the inequities, because even the foundations tend to, or for a long time, fund based on the shiny pretty. Because the shiny pretty tends to kind of speak whatever language, where there's rooted, you know, this rooted, vibrant kind of culture doesn't articulate in the same way. But one thing I found as a curator here in Detroit, and I really had to really understand the what that meant, how art and culture from the Black community is completely and utterly tied with social justice work.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, regardless if they state that or not, there's no separation. You're always trying to teach the youth, feed the youth, you know, provide water for families. You're co-opting, you're looking at all these different ways to help really support your community in a deep, deep way. So artists work within these realms, you know, they call this social practice within the art world, but it goes so much deeper than just a social practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, because you're a part of that community. You know the people who are living without water. Their stories are so close to you. There's no way for you not to care, right? So it's not just like, oh, go pay your water bill. It's like, oh, let me go find the resources so that you can maybe, you know, get a grant to.
So it's also like a question, really, of empathy and situation.
Water. Yeah.
I mean, I think the. You know, as you start talking about community and you're bringing in this idea of the tradition of arts and social justice, I think that's a great place to mention like your history in the arts, particularly Afrotopia, its focus on Afrofuturism, and like walk us through a bit of what got you in that place, to focus your work, to focus your curatorial process on that particular space in the culture and art world?
Right. Afrotopia, I created about 5 years now. And it really came about because I was so shocked when I got back home 7 years ago that Blackness was defined in a very particular way. And after traveling around the world and experiencing all the different types of Blackness, I became a little concerned for Detroit. And then also the future is continuously being determined by white men. And that doesn't seem right in an 85% Black city. That was like the inspiration. And I decided to kind of make it the space of experimentation and research to figure out different ways to help people imagine healthier futures for themselves and for the city. But also, we have a really intense race issue here in Detroit. We have not healed from 67 Rebellion. We have not really gone past that hard place with race between the suburbs and the city. So people still have a fearful relationship with the Black body. And I found that Afrofuturism was a great tool to not only expand Blackness, create new futures, but really to help people develop a new relationship with the Black body, which means you develop a new relationship with the city of Detroit. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with Afrofuturism, I define it as a way of talking about the Black experience using speculative modalities like science fiction, fantasy, and magical realism, while also incorporating African mythologies and legends. And these mythologies and legends actually are just indigenous from all over. And looking at science and its relationship to race and technology and innovation, and all of that together kind of can develop and create this evolving arts movement, Afrofuturism. But it's also a philosophy. And one of the main tenets of it is to empower Black-bodied people and hopefully in helping them to control their own destiny. So to define, you know, ourselves and to control our destiny has never been the agenda for Black-bodied people in the United States, ever. So it's radical all into itself. And I thought it was the perfect tool for Detroit to, in terms of this talk about futures, we really need to understand that Black people have to be empowered in those futures. And we have to be empowered now in order to be empowered in a future. All of this, you know, recontextualizing the past, creating new narratives, all of these things are to help create a healthier perspective about ourselves and others like us.
I'm just curious. I know that you already spoke about what sort of motivated your run, but I'm just curious in general. I know in some of the circles that we're in here, just in light of, you know, the national situation and Trump and everything else, but I'm wondering if around you, do you think that there's other people like you, or are you meeting other people like you, just in the sense of people who are not the sort of typical profile of like, okay, I went to law school or I worked through certain really specific hoops that most people have traditionally kind of gone through before they decide they run for office. They have like a really clear, you know, kind of professional or even service work track that kind of gets them in certain systems and certain machines and certain pathways. It feels like that's kind of opening up. And I'm just wondering if, you know, do you see your run as part of a larger wave like that?
I definitely see my run as a part of a larger movement that's happening across the nation. Since the presidential election, more and more people are interested in entering politics and have been inspired because maybe they don't agree with the policies that are being put forth for, you know, on local level, on a state level, and federal level. It is, you know, we tend to believe that only a certain kind of person can do the job, but the problem has been that they failed us continuously.
Yes, totally. Yeah, right. So, like the one group of people that can do the job have been fucking up the job in different ways for decades.
So when people are, you know, tell me that, you know, you're an unlikely candidate because you're a curator, and I'm like, well, our current president didn't have any experience in politics, and look where he is now.
Yeah, but he's a reality show host and a trust fund baby, so I kind of a little experienced.
But I think that, but I think what's interesting is that, you know, I'm not even business. So what will happen is that you'll, you know, for someone who's outside the box, it's usually a business person.
Right.
And we somehow want to trust.
We valorize that.
Huh?
We valorize that.
Right. And it's very weird to me because corporations have not been really serving everyone equitably for a long period of time. They go into, you know, they believe in these bankruptcy processes and all kinds of processes that may not be actually great for city government. And we don't really question it. I don't understand that. I think a lot of people are tired of that. And it's like we're going around in circles, you know, and it's time for us to like get out of the system and break free and be as open and radical about how we're addressing these issues. And for once and for all, have a government that serves the people.
Yep.
There it is.
That's what's on point.
I can't think of a better way to wrap than that. Serve the people.
Protect the planet, serve the people.
Yeah, and water is a right.
That's right.
You can find more about the mayoral campaign at LaFleurForMayor.com.
Thank you so much for joining us, Ingrid. This was great.
Well, thank you so much for having me.